Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and welcome to our English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up on today's program, the Pope and the People. We have a report on Pope Francis's Wednesday General Audience, where he appealed to Christians, Jews and Muslims to pray for peace in the Middle East. The Journey to God. Listen to the third and final part in our series on contemplation, featuring the renowned Dominican preacher, Father Paul Murray. And a lifeline for a generation of refugees. We learn about a new project by the Sat7 Christian Satellite TV to launch a 24-hour educational channel to tackle the education gap across the Middle East. As usual, we begin our broadcast with Pope Francis's Wednesday General Audience, where he spoke of the great need for peace in the Middle East and appealed to Christians, Jews and Muslims to pray for this goal. The Pope also said he would participate in the 1 Minute for Peace prayer initiative held on June the 8th that coincided with the third anniversary of the prayer service held in the Vatican with the late Israeli President Shimon Peres and the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Earlier, during his catechesis, Pope Francis spoke about the fatherhood of God, describing it as the wellspring of our hope. He said the mystery of God's relationship with humankind is revolutionary, in that Christians can look to him without fear, as children to a loving father. Christopher Wells reports.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, buongiorno.
Pope Francis' catechesis focused on the Christian prayer par excellence, the Our Father. The whole mystery of Christian prayer, he said, is summed up here, in having the courage to call God Father. Calling God Father, the Pope said, is not insignificant. It would be normal for human beings to invoke God using the most magnificent titles on account of God's infinite greatness. Instead, the use of the word Father puts us in a relationship of trust with him, as a child who turns to his dad, knowing he is loved and cared for by him. The mystery of God's transcendence always fascinates us and makes us feel small. But, the Pope said, we are no longer afraid. We do not feel crushed or anguished.
Dio è padre, dice Gesù.
God is a father, the Pope continued, but he is not like human fathers. Instead, Jesus offers the parable of the prodigal son, where the father welcomes his child with forgiveness and love rather than judgment. That, he says, is perhaps why St. Paul, when referring to this mystery, prefers not to translate the Aramaic term Abba, which is more intimate than father, and might better be translated as Papa or Daddy. Dear brothers and sisters, Pope Francis said, we are never alone.
Non siamo mai soli.
Even when we are distant or even hostile to God, even when we might claim to be without God, God the Father does not remain distant from us. He will never be a God without man. This providential plan of God is a great mystery. Whatever our needs, whatever our problems, the Pope reminded us that God is always our Father, who is always watching over us with love, a Father who will never abandon us. Pope Francis concluded the audience by asking those in St. Peter's Square to think about their necessities, their problems, and to always turn to God in confidence and hope. I'm Christopher Wells.
What is it like to come close to the presence of God? That's the title of our special programme on contemplation, featuring the renowned preacher and poet, Dominican Father Paul Murray. Father Murray explores the spiritual journey of the contemplative and bases his reflections on a talk he gave to Britain's upper chamber of Parliament, the House of Lords. It was the first ever talk to the chamber delivered by an Irish Dominican friar. And today we bring you the third and final part of his reflections, produced by Veronica Scaresbrick.
What is it like to come close to the presence of God? One of the most common images used by the saints and the great contemplatives to describe the journey to God is that of an arduous climb up a high mountain, the image of an ascent. But I've been suggesting in these talks that there is another way of thinking about this subject, a different image given to us by the saints, an image not of going up higher and higher in the spirit, but rather an image of going down, an image of a humble descent, an image even of falling. And progress on this path can be thought of as taking place, I suggest, in three stages. First, falling into sin. Second, falling towards grace. And third, falling in love with God. Having already, in the earlier talks, considered the first two stages, the focus of our attention now will be on the third and final stage, falling in love with God. Spiritual progress described so far has been one of healing and purification. God has allowed us to be stripped of the pride we have had in our own righteousness, the purpose being that when in nakedness of spirit and vulnerability, we at last fall back on Him, His touch is felt by us as never before. And by virtue of that touch, we know ourselves to have entered into a new realm of grace, into a new awareness. We are drawn to Him as to a friend, to someone we love. Indeed, writes one of the early fathers of the Church, the soul is led by a heavenly love and desire when once the beauty and glory of the Word of God has been perceived. The soul falls in love with His splendor, and by this receives from Him some dart and wound of love. An unforgettable moment of such wounding occurs in John of the Cross's celebrated poem, The Spiritual Canticle. At a certain stage in the poem, the bride, who represents the soul, is made aware that at last her beloved is present, and at once, quickened to joy by the thought of his arrival and by the strength and beauty of his presence, she exclaims, "My beloved, the mountains, the solitary wooded valleys, the strange islands, the resounding rivers, the whisper of the loving breezes, the tranquil night. At the time of the rising of the dawn, the silent music, the sounding solitude, the supper that refreshes and awakens love." Writing some years earlier in one of his prose commentaries, St. John explains that the acts of love which arise from the heart of the contemplative on these occasions are of such astonishing worth in the eyes of God that even one of them is more valuable than all the deeds that a person may have performed in his or her whole life, no matter how great those deeds may have been. Of course, what is being described here by St. John is contemplative experience at the highest level. That does not mean, however, in the context of our own efforts at prayer, that God does not take delight in even the most humble acts of love. For corresponding to the high mystical woundings or touches that quicken love in the hearts of the great contemplatives, there are other blessings and graces of the divine presence and of the divine touch, which even the least of us, on occasion, are privileged to experience. And not to be forgotten also are those moments of natural mysticism, which can sometimes awaken in both believer and unbeliever a sense of the transcendent. T.S. Eliot calls them moments in and out of time. He writes, "The distraction fit, lost in a shaft of sunlight, the wild time unseen, or the winter lightning, or the waterfall, or music heard so deeply that it is not heard at all, but you are the music while the music lasts." How impressively, in those last few lines, Eliot evokes the power of music. And music, or certain forms of religious music, might well be a really good way to introduce the subject of Christian prayer and contemplation, especially to those who have no knowledge whatever of the Christian faith. For music, in an almost miraculous way, can communicate at times not only aspects of the meaning, but also something of the innermost beauty of Christian prayer. One has only to think, for example, of the great choral music of the Russian Orthodox liturgy, or of the singing of Latin plain chant in monasteries in Europe and across the world, or of the music sung by King's College Choir in Cambridge, or of the music composed for Christian feasts and celebrations by Bach and Thales, Byrd and Palestrina, and by so many others. Hearing music of this kind can, I suggest, have almost the same impact on us as taking time to read some of the great mystical texts in the Christian tradition. Our inner heart is quickened and awakened. We find ourselves being instinctively drawn forward by the beauty of the sound and by the beauty of truth, drawn while the music lasts, to give our full and rapt attention to even the least echo of the eternal word, the least trace of the source of all beauty, the God whom Hopkins calls beauty's self and beauty's giver. This God, a God not only of truth and of goodness, but of beauty, was of course the God who in the end so completely captivated the mind and heart of Augustine. For beauty, in its different forms, was the one thing which had always obsessed him as a man, both before and after his conversion. At one point in the Confessions, in a passage which is justly celebrated, we find Augustine reflecting on that divine love, which not only intervened to save him, but which in the end absolutely overwhelmed him with its beauty. It's a passage that contains what must surely be one of the most moving descriptions of falling in love with God ever written. I am happy now to read it for you and to bring to an end these few reflections on Christian prayer and contemplation. Late, late have I loved you, O beauty, ever ancient and ever new. You were within me, and I was in the world outside myself. I searched for you outside myself, and disfigured as I was, I fell upon the lovely things of your creation. You were with me, but I was not with you. You called me, you cried aloud to me, you broke my barrier of deafness, you shone upon me, your radiance enveloped me, you put my blindness to flight, you shed your fragrance about me. I drew breath, and now I gasp for your sweet odor. I tasted you, and now I hunger and thirst for you. You touched me, and now I burn for your peace.
And many thanks there to Veronica Scaresbrick for producing that three-part programme featuring the renowned preacher, Dominican Father Paul Murray. Sat7 is a Christian satellite TV station in the Middle East that is preparing to launch a 24-hour educational channel to respond to the urgent needs of refugees and internally displaced people across the region, especially in war-torn Syria. Called Sat7 Academy, the new channel will also seek to bring positive changes to viewers of all backgrounds and help correct common misconceptions about Christians. Kurt Johansson is the executive director of Sat7 in Europe and Asia, and he spoke to Linda Bordoni during a recent visit to Rome for talks with partners inside and outside the Vatican. Johansson told her that whilst their programmes cover many issues, at the heart of Sat7's mission is the wish to be the voice of Christians in the Middle East.
Sat7 is a Christian TV station in the Middle East. We broadcast on 4 different TV channels 24 hours a day on satellites. Satellite TV is the media of the Middle East. More than 300 million have access to satellite TV. So this is actually the first time in world history that we can go into 300 million homes with a Christian message. Produced in the Middle East, we have studios in Egypt, in Lebanon, in Turkey, and we have been able to unite all the churches. Orthodox, Catholic, and Protestant churches are all behind Sat7 from 19 different countries. So it's really to show the unity in the diversity of Middle East churches.
And your programs cover a broad spectrum of issues as well.
Yeah, we try to be covering all aspects of life. Of course, first of all, the teaching of the church, the Bible, trying to be the voice of the church and of the Christians, but also what it means to be a Christian, especially to be a minority Christian. We're trying to give the Christians more identity, perhaps more legitimacy, in a very difficult situation. So it's also about how to apply the faith in the daily life.
Would you, for example, pick up on what the Pope says about Christians in the Middle East and do interviews or programmes on issues like that?
Oh, yeah. We were... The Pope was in Cairo recently. We covered that 24 hours a day live. He's very popular in the Middle East, and the message of peace and inclusion is very needed. It's very important. And I think he just spoke the way that all Christians would like to hear. And I think he spoke very nicely to the non-Christians as well and made a beautiful impact in a very troubled region.
You were mentioning to me that you've just come through first Lebanon and then Turkey. You've been to visit refugees, refugee camps, and mentioning that your programs go out to a lot of non-Christians as well. Would you like to tell me?
According to independent surveys, most of our viewers are actually non-Christians. They have the chance now to see what are these Christians talking about. Who are they? Most people in the Middle East will never meet a Christian. They will never see a church. They will never see a Bible. So satellite TV is the only way that they can somehow get acquainted or getting more information about what is Christianity and who are these Christians. There are many misunderstandings about Christians in the Middle East, that they don't belong here, they are spies for a foreign government, and so on and so on. So it's very important to show an Arabic version of Christianity, that Christians have been here for almost 2,000 years. They have contributed a lot, still have a lot to contribute to this society. So we are covering a lot of different subjects and trying to bring the church out on the marketplace to show what is the church, how are they doing social work, how are they perhaps involving into human rights issues, politics, and so on.
I know you have a specific mission towards education and towards infancy, childhood, but before getting to that, are Muslims, would you say, generally interested in hearing what the message of the gospel is and hearing what is it that these Christians are all about?
I guess so, because they have a free choice to watch our channels or not. And if they like to see it, it must mean that they have an interest. And if they continue to watch it, it must imply that they have a huge interest in this. So I think in many ways we are building bridges to the non-Christians. And I think also that we are opening the eyes of non-Christians to what is real Christianity. And we are eliminating a lot of misunderstandings that non-Christians have about Christians.
You're also reaching out to so many refugees, many of them trapped for years and years in refugee camps with no future in sight as yet. What are you offering them, and you know, what can they gain from watching your programs?
For 2 years now, we've been broadcasting 10 hours a day of educational programs. So children can learn how to read and write, mathematics, science, and life skills in front of their TV. There are millions of kids who are not in school and have not been in school for years and will probably not be in school for the coming years as well. It's a lost generation.
And it's actually above all of Syrian refugees.
Especially Syrian. You know, in Syria, more than 4,000 schools have been closed. Millions of kids are displaced in Turkey, in Jordan, in Lebanon, without access to any services. I just came back from Lebanon. I visited a number of camps. They had nothing, really. They were in tents. It was very cold. They had hardly any shoes. But every tent had a satellite dish and a TV. So that's how they spent the whole day in front of the television. And the kids can also learn how to read and write through our programs.
It also keeps them in touch with their own reality as well.
Yeah.
It helps them understand what's going on in the world otherwise.
Yeah, it gives them some kind of introduction to what's going on in the world and also some, you know, some normality, that they feel that we're part of the world. We may be displaced in the middle of nowhere. No one likes us here. But on this virtual TV, they can feel somehow being part of the world. It's actually our vision to have a 24-hour educational channel from 1st of September. We still need the financial side to be okay. We're moving slowly towards a 24-hour educational channel.
Is that why you're in Rome?
It's one of the reasons I'm in Rome today, yes. I'm in contact with Propaganda Fida, with TV 2000, with the Bishops' Conference and other Catholic congregations here, like the Congregation for Social Media. So I come here once a year to inform about what we're doing and maybe also to get some responses and feedback from the Catholic Church.
Now, this project you're speaking of, it's School on Air program, it's called, am I correct?
Yeah.
How many languages is it going to go out into, which countries?
It's all in Arabic. There are 20 countries where the Arabic is the language. So actually, that's easy for us to go out to 20 countries in one language. Our programs are targeted towards the Syrian refugees, so it will be in Arabic. But according to the independent surveys, actually, a lot of our viewers are in Egypt, and we didn't really understand that in the beginning because they were not a target group. But it's probably because education system in Egypt is also very poor. If you cannot afford to send your child to a private school, the education is usually very, very poor. No books, hardly any teachers, a lot of people, students in the same class. So we can complement the public schools in Egypt, in other countries as well.
How exactly does the program work?
So far we are covering the kindergarten level and grade one and grade two. That's what we can do in 10 hours a day. And we're covering Arabic, mathematics, science, a bit of English, but also life skills, as we call it, to include others, to love your neighbor, to behave well, to have ideas and be creative and so on. And because we have the best teachers in our studios, because we can add cartoons and songs and so on, we can make it very attractive and very unlike the normal school situation in the Middle East. So we believe that we can teach millions of kids, give them a hope and feel that they are loved by someone. And hopefully they can go back to school someday in Syria and continue from there. But of course, it doesn't look very easy. It looks like this war will go on for a long time. I'm sorry to say this. The independent viewership research said we had about 21 million viewers. We are also now on social media. We have every day 30,000 downloads on YouTube of our programs. Millions of Facebook hits and so on. So I guess social media is one of the future goals for us. But also we like to do much more in Turkey. The Christians in Turkey are very few and have a very difficult situation. At the moment we have about 35 staff in Turkey producing TV programs almost round the clock, but we need to do more in Turkey as well. So Turkey is also one of our priorities. It's really difficult times in Turkey, but that's why there's a high need of a Christian voice in this society. And the good news is that Seven has been allowed to have a channel on the Turksat satellite systems, where actually owned by the Turkish government. So we are operating with a permission from the Turkish government. So we're very grateful for the Turkish government to give us this opportunity as a minority to promote ourselves.
What gives you personally the drive to go forward with this work? You must encounter a lot of difficulties.
Yeah, I've been with Seven now for 17 years, and there is a lot of difficulties. It's difficult to be an optimist in the Middle East. But as I see it, if we give up, we can't give up. We cannot allow to give up. We still have possibility, a duty to bring love and hope, and the witness of Christ to this region. The message of forgiveness and inclusion is very, very, very important. Without the message of forgiveness, I can't see any end to this circle of violence and attacks and hate that we see in the Middle East at this time.
That was Kurt Johansson, Regional Executive Director of the Sat7 Christian Satellite TV Station, speaking to Linda Bordoni. And that's all we have time for today. Thanks for joining us here on Vatican Radio. And don't forget you can listen to our programmes at any time by checking out our website on en.radiovaticana.va. That's en.radiovaticana.va. I'm Susie Hodges, and until next time, Laudato Jesus Christus.